Welcome to Under the Influence, the podcast where we help chiropractors improve their communication skills so they can help more people and help people more. I'm your host, Dr. Martin Harvey. I'm a chiropractor and I'm an expert in communicating the value of chiropractic. Today on Under the Influence, I'm going to be reviewing a new book called Super Communicators by Charles Duhigg. So Super Communicators, as the title suggests, is a topic that would be of a lot of interest to me, and I imagine a lot of interest to you, because imagine what it would be like to be a super communicator, to be the sort of person who has elevated talents for being able to communicate with others. So the description of it is, we'll know people who are capable of connecting with almost anyone. Sounds pretty good to me. They're the ones we love talking to, who we turn to for advice, who hear what we're trying to say and make us feel seen. So the description of it, as you can imagine, is super enticing for us to dive into. Finished the book and I've been through it in a lot of detail to tease out the lessons that I think are valuable for all of us in chiropractic and will help us to elevate our ability to help people, help them more and help more of them. So a couple of announcements. I will be in London on May 18th for a one-day seminar on the Daily Visit Communication Intensive. It's one of my favourite programs because you're working with arguably the most important visit. So if you can make that one count, that's really the key to maintaining, to elevating, to developing relationships and also developing their understanding of the value of chiropractic. And the program will help you develop a simple system that you can use on every single visit that will make your visits more impactful and also more fun. And you can do it in a short period of time. The program's been designed so that you go home with your system ready to plug in. You don't have a whole lot of homework to do. And so it can start having an impact for you the very next day in practice. So link is in the show notes for more details or to sign up. The next weekend, I will be in Portugal as part of the Portuguese Chiropractors Association 25th anniversary. The program is amazing. Some great speakers from around the world. The focus is on communication, caring, and chiropractic. So that's May 24th and 25th in Lisbon. Great opportunity to connect with a bunch of awesome chiropractors and see a pretty amazing part of Europe. So hope to see you there. I will also be speaking at the Australian Chiropractors Association conference in Cairns on July 27th, 28th. Again, a great program, lots of cool speakers, a number of previous guests of the podcast on it. So I hope to see you there also. For Australians, a really amazing opportunity to escape the cooler weather and get to tropical Cairns. If you are keen to visit Australia, this is a great opportunity to connect with the Australian chiropractic community, which, you know, with all humility, is a pretty cool chiropractic community, and have a holiday in the tropical part of Australia. So yeah, it's going to be a great event. Aligned Practice will be opening soon. The wait list is, the number of people on the wait list is more than the number of spaces, but not everybody will follow through. So if you are interested in being part of the next round of Aligned Practice, please send me an email so that you can go on the wait list. The order that it'll happen is I will let people on the wait list know, and then a little bit after that, I will email my whole database as soon as it's ready to go. So back to super communicators. So the core idea in super communicators is that when we're having conversations, when we're having important conversations, there are really three different types of conversations that could be happening. And super communicators are really skilled, i.e. not talented. This is a series of skills that they've developed. And if it's a skill, we can all develop them, that determine kind of what the way that you want to approach those conversations are. So what are the three types of conversations? The first one is a practical conversation that's all about decision making and problem solving. The second type of conversation is more of an emotional conversation where it's really about people's feelings and people seeking to find empathy. And they're also about deepening connections on a personal level. The third type are social conversations. And social conversations are really about relationships and identities and exploring how individuals view themselves and interact with others across different social landscapes. So we sometimes don't know exactly what a conversation is about, but super communicators, the skills that allow you to become a super communicator, are centered on, first of all, recognizing what sort of conversation is happening and then applying the appropriate skills to make it an impactful one. So what can we get out of super communicators for us in chiropractic? So some of the information in super communicators is stuff that we've probably spoken about quite a bit on the podcast, and it adds some extra context to that. But if you've been listening to the podcast, the core ideas are probably going to come together for you. One of the key things is, I think here, is that we often think that we are having a practical conversation, that we are talking to people about their recommendations for care, about asking them, you know, why they cancelled an appointment, why they're looking to drop out of care, why they're any of those things that we're having. We're often viewing them through a very practical lens, because for us, our participation in that is very, very practical. We're the care provider, we're the recommender. But we also need to recognize that it often might be for them an emotional conversation. So in that context of us giving recommendations for care or asking people questions on a first visit, we're asking these practical questions of, what sort of pain, where does it travel to, what makes it better, what makes it worse, or we're giving practical recommendations on a second visit where, look, you need to be here two or three times a week and you need to do these exercises, it's going to take this long and it's going to cost this much. Whereas for them, there could be this overlay of emotional concerns that are really the core of the conversation for them. You know, I'm worried that I won't be able to look after my baby. I'm worried that it might get worse. I'm scared that, am I really the sort of person who does alternative things? Or should I be spending the time, energy, resources on this when I should be looking after my kids? So the last two of them are really more identity social. So The point there, though, is that we are coming into it with this practical sort of lens, whereas for them it could be emotional, you know, how they feel about it. And even separate to that, it could be identity-based, like how does this align with how I see myself? How will this make me look to the people around me? So a simple way of thinking about that is extending a metaphor that we've spoken about before, where we've spoken about the idea that there are two types of thinking that we do, or in this context, two types of conversation. There's the judge conversation, the judge type of thinking, which is very analytical, or the gator type thinking, which is more emotional, reactive, and risk averse. And we're then extending that metaphor to include the idea that people will tend to have this sort of social or identity-based thinking that informs their emotions, that informs what logic they're willing to listen to. And I'll often speak about that as there's this sort of tribal sense of what do people like me, people who have the same identity as me, what would they do in this circumstance? So it's sort of like the gator trumps the judge and the gator is tribal. Or if we bundle super communicators in with a whole lot of influence literature, it's really pretty a useful shortcut to think that always assume that you're communicating with a risk-averse tribal gator. So let's dive into each of the three different conversations and perhaps some more specific lessons that we as chiropractors can have, because what I've spoken about at the moment is kind of that more conceptual idea of the different types of conversations. Well, what should we do differently if in each of these different kind of conversations? So if we're looking at a practical conversation, and there is I'm saying this, you know, that we need to look at some of these conversations that we're having that other people may be looking at in an emotional or identity-based context. But there is a practical component to it. There's no point just listening to somebody, how somebody feels about something, without then getting to the point, well, what do we do as far as your care goes? So the first distinction in these practical conversations that we need to have is we've got to realize that people don't always make decisions in the way that we think they will, or that we think they should do. So it's critical to understand, first of all, the gator versus the judge, that people need logical reasons and they need those emotional reasons to be met as well. And some of that is that almost sort of tribal or identity-based thing of sensing a sense of connection, that people will buy you before they buy your message. And so before we get into the practical part of it, we need to make sure that we've got a connection with them as well. And the key way that we create this connection is through empathy. Now, empathy is one of those words that sounds really, really good, but how do you do empathy? So, and Duhigg in this book goes through a bunch of sort of really practical things that you can do that create connection, many of which create empathy, many of which we've spoken about on the podcast as connection strategies. So, making sure that you're using people's names, eye contact, touch, all those things we've spoken about many times on this before. One thing that he places a huge amount of emphasis on here that I probably didn't see, and this is one of my big takeaways from Super Communicators, is the value of paraphrasing. And he talks a lot about a strategy called looping. And looping is essentially where you ask people a question, and you loop back to make sure that you've understood it. So the way that I would see this working, say in a first visit, would be if you were, say, taking the flow that we might have of in the retention recipe 2.0, where we first of all create connection with people and then we give an open frame. So tell me all about what's going on with your headaches. And then after that, you might say anything else. And then you would loop back and paraphrase. So, Jane, what I hear you saying is that you're concerned that you've got headaches and that the headaches are getting worse and having more of an impact. And that seems to be of most concern to you because it's making it hard for you to enjoy your time with your family. And so what this does is, first of all, clarifies and makes sure that you are on the same page. But in terms of this practical component of it, it's the action that creates empathy. You are being a super community. You're the person that they definitely feel heard and seen with. And we do those loops a few times. We'd go through unpacking questions where we're asking about the impact of it, and we're bringing in more of that emotional conversation about how they feel about it. And then we would loop back in and paraphrase that in our own words to make sure that they know that we've heard and we're resonating with them, because we're connecting with the depth of the experience that they're having. The next thing in terms of these practical conversations is, and linked to that idea that people value things differently to what we may think that they will or think that they should do, is that it's really important that we're not talking about those features, i.e. you will have a better posture, you'll have less subluxations, you'll have less nerve interference, you'll have an improved range of motion, any of these things. What does that mean for them? You'll be this is about getting you back to being able to enjoy your time with your family. So remembering that while it is that linking that practical, the program is you need to do XYZ, and the purpose of that is to ABC, the things that are important to them. So if we now look more explicitly at the emotional part of that conversation, and you'll see that they're a little bit blurred because we've already touched on some aspects of emotion and identity in the previous section. But if we shift our lens of focus here, key thing here is if people are really emotional, trying to help doesn't really help. So in the book, he talks about three short versions, if we're talking about this idea of entering a conversation that could be a practical conversation, an emotional conversation, or a social conversation, there's a short version of it that he says, are you looking to help, which is what you would do if it was purely a practical conversation? Are you trying to connect with them? Are you trying to make them feel heard, i.e. hug, which is sort of what you need to do if you're just engaging in an emotional conversation? Or do they need to be heard, which is, do they just want to express their perspective on something, which is aligning with a social conversation? So in an emotional conversation, or the emotional component of a conversation, if we try and help somebody and they're really wanting to have an emotional conversation, trying to fix somebody's emotional perspective isn't often helpful. It's more valuable then if we ask about those emotions. So how do you feel? Like I can sense that you're upset about your headaches. How do you feel about them? Is a more valuable type of questioning in that context. And so what sort of questions are valuable here? Open-ended questions, not yes, no questions, but how do you feel about, and what do you like about, what are you concerned about, what are you worried about? The next skill that is part of this empathy, yes, it's about asking questions and recognizing that there's an emotional component to it. The next skill of empathy is to either match them, to either share something emotional yourself, or but more match the tone of their emotion. So he has a really cool algorithm here, and this is another big takeaway from me. Say algorithm, it's really just one of those simple matrix where you really look at the whole range of emotions that people could have, whether it's worried, angry, happy, sad, elated, etc., frustrated, etc., etc. They really fall into one of four sort of squares, and they're either positive or negative emotions. So both happy and elated, or happy and contented, are positive emotions, but they differ on the other aspect of this, which is low energy versus high energy. So a high energy positive emotion would be elation, excitement, etc. A low energy positive emotion would be contentment, serenity, and a high energy negative emotion would be anger, rage, even frustration. A low energy negative emotion would be frustration. Oh, not sorry, not frustration. Would be despair or depression or a sense of hopelessness. And so we either want to match them. So if somebody is in a high energy emotion, you don't want to come in all low energy. If somebody's in a low energy sort of state, you don't want to come in all high energy. You want to sort of match that or acknowledge it. And so the way that you could acknowledge it is to make sure they seem, if somebody's coming across as really sort of despondent and frustrated, look, I just don't know that this is ever going to get better, switching straight to a practical conversation, turning it into a practical conversation. Look, I've done this for years and years and years, and confident I can help you, almost negates that emotional part of it. So we first of all need to acknowledge that emotional part of it and name it. Look, it sounds like you're really feeling quite hopeless about things, and then wait for their, and similar to the paraphrasing thing, we're making sure that we are getting it right. And they might say, no, I'm not really feeling hopeless, I'm more frustrated. And it's important that you have that conversation before you then go into the practical, well, look, can I make a suggestion? This is how I would suggest we go about things. So if we move then from this emotional piece of the conversation to more of the social part of it, the lessons here are, first of all, identity is powerful. So if we look at emotion trumps logic, And one of the major drivers of emotion is our identity and how we see a situation relative to our identity. And in particular, we need to be very aware for the potential of what is described as identity threat. So identity threat is where someone kind of lumps you into an identity you don't like or consider yourself to be part of. And this could be either implicit or explicit. So as an example, if they described you as a quack, or that chiropractors are unscientific or something, so they're lumping you in an identity that you don't like, then that's not going to feel good, and you're not going to feel a sense of connection. You're not going to feel like you want to deal with this person or follow their advice. Flip that around, and if we talk about people who have looked after their spine in a way that we don't think is ideal, and we say, look, you've dealt with this all the time in just a reactive way, then it's labeling it and it's putting them in as kind of an implied identity of people who aren't responsible for their own bodies, aren't responsible for their own health. So we need to be very careful about that. You also want to be aware of identity threat if you're excluding somebody from your identity that they aspire to, or they do consider themselves part of. So if we put it to us, it might be somebody said, I wouldn't expect you to really know about this because you haven't had a medical education when it's an aspect of health, then that you can see how that would put you on the back foot. That would make you disinclined to want to engage with that person. And we might do the same thing if we were to describe somebody as, look, you probably aren't aware of this because you're not the sort of person who's done much exercise in the past. And you can see that while from our perspective that might be true, that may not be something that they really want to be. They don't like the way that presents them, or represents them, I should say. So if we look at all of this in context, there's a couple of really critical things that I think we can learn about supercommunicators. First one is that supercommunicators, it really starts with empathy. It starts with understanding the other person's perspective and priorities. So we need to recognize that most of the conversations that we have, our priority is often quite practical, and that others are going to bring emotional and identity or social related concerns and priorities to it. That the short version of this is that if we get it wrong and we focus just on the practical part of it, that we're dealing with a risk-averse tribal gater. And so that's probably not going to work out so well for us. And in our language, in terms of the practical skills and the art of empathy, it's about asking questions. It's about recognizing what emotional state somebody has. And it's about recognizing the power of their identity. And as quickly as possible in an interaction, looking for a shared identity. So a shared identity creates a sense of trust and connection. And that can be as simple as creating a connection through the person that they were referred by, creating a connection by asking questions about their job and what they like about it. So we create that emotional connection, or what they find challenging about it if it doesn't seem like they like it. Or similarly, we could do that about what you like about the area that you live in. So with this understanding of this almost sort of hierarchy of the importance of different aspects of the conversation, we can create a higher level of connection with people, and in doing that, we can loop the things that are important to them and link the things that are important to them to the practical thing of the value of starting to have chiropractic care, because it helps them get back to doing something that's important to them, and to continue having chiropractic care because it minimizes the chance of that going back, or them being able to do whatever's important to them at a higher level. And where those things connect with their sense of who they are, their identity, that's where we're going to have the largest impact in terms of them seeing chiropractic in the true level of value that it's offering to them. So I'd love to hear how you find this information. If you've read Supercommunicators, I'd love to hear what your thoughts were, what were your lessons in it. And thanks for listening to Under the Influence, and I'll catch you again next time. If you like today's episode, then you will love the Retention Recipe 2.0. It's an online workshop that is broken into 33 lessons and has over 7 hours of content, which will teach you to confidently communicate the value of proactive chiropractic in the first 12 visits. So if we want to have long-term retention, if we want people to stay with us for months, years, and reap the really amazing health benefits that happen with long-term chiropractic care, we need to set the foundation for that in the first 12 visits. So the approaches in the Retention Recipe 2.0 are based on state-of-the-art influence strategies that are effective, ethical, and they're enjoyable to use. They will help you to have more fun, less stress, and increase your retention, which means more practice growth and less always being on the hunt for new people. Check it out in the link in the show notes.